Welcome back, everyone, to Constructive Uncoupling, the podcast devoted to amicable divorces. I'm Judith Weigel, your host and amicable divorce expert. Why? Because that's all I do, amicable divorces. And that's who I interview, people who also do amicable divorces. And towards that end, we have Cheryl Duffy from Sydney, Australia, who she just reminded me is in my future because she's tomorrow to my today, right, Cheryl? You're Thursday morning.
Exactly.
This is really cool. I love this. As much as I worried about conducting these interviews for the podcast on Zoom, it's really been a blessing in disguise because I've been able to talk to wonderful people like yourself from all over the world. And what I'm finding is there's lots of similarities between all of us working in the divorce business, but yet there's always something unique. And what I want to do to everybody listening is Cheryl is a certified divorce coach and mediator. And Cheryl, you, welcome, by the way.
Thank you very much.
Excellent. So Cheryl, you know, interesting with you is you, like all of us, came to this industry by virtue of our own divorces.
Absolutely. And it really gives you a passion to help others so they don't have to suffer like you have.
I know. And it provides a really nice framework of empathy because I don't know how anybody can work in the divorce business if they haven't experienced the grief, the pain, the fear, and the uncertainty of divorce like you did.
Absolutely.
So would you just catch us up a little bit on what were the salient points? What did you go through in your divorce that became learning vehicles that you could use to your best interest and to your client's best interest?
Well, my divorce was 13 years ago, and I was the one that was left, which I think is always worse for people who are left because they feel so shocked and blindsided that they didn't see it coming. And so therefore, I just basically plummeted into depression, and I started comfort eating. So chocolate became my best friend, and I just started to obviously put on so much weight, and my self-loathing just was growing and growing because I didn't like who I was becoming and who I was. And that was just sort of justifying my, you know, my sort of feelings that this is why my ex left, was because I wasn't good enough. So it was basically then that it took me a good 8 years to recover from my divorce. And I had my daughter who was, my children were 15 and 12 when my ex left, but it wasn't until 6 years after my divorce that my daughter said to me, "Mom, why don't you get dressed up and go out and have some fun?" Because she could really see how unhappy I was. And I said to her, "Oh, I really don't feel like it." And she said, "Mom, I don't know what to do to make you happy. I try so hard to make you happy." And that was really such a shock for me to think that my daughter was taking on that responsibility of my happiness. And I said to her, "What do you mean?" I said, "I'm responsible for my own happiness, not you." And it really sort of made me realize that I needed to, you know, snap out of it, so to speak, because I think you spiral into this negativity and bitterness and anger that it's very, very hard to get out of. So I went on a health regime and I lost all that weight, and my confidence was really boosting because people were noticing my transformation. And so people who were going through divorce would come to me for advice. And I said to my mom one day, "Oh, I should write a book because I have so many people asking for my advice." So that's what I went and did. I wrote a book to help people so they wouldn't spend years wasting their life after divorce. And basically the Divorce Tango was born, and that's the book that I published. And I then decided to do coaching, so I became a certified divorce coach and created the Divorce Center, which is a one-stop shop for divorce.
And when did you become a mediator?
I became a mediator last year, but became a divorce coach 2 years ago.
Do you have a preference which one you like to do more, or are they equally interesting to you?
I think the coaching side I really enjoy because I'm sort of like a problem solver, so I really love to work with them to create win-win solutions and help them sort of get past. They're usually stuck where they are, not really knowing what to do or, you know, how to get there, even if they know what they're wanting. So it's a case of working with them, and it's getting them through that emotional grief and being that support partner for them and helping them understand, you know, why they're feeling the way they're feeling. And also they're often very, very shocked that their partner has moved on so quickly. But like I've said to all my clients, that, you know, the stage of the grief cycle that your partner has left is so different to when you started the grief. So, you know, someone could be, you know, in their marriage 12 months, 24 months before they actually decide to leave, where they have been trying to make it work, and realizing, coming to that acceptance that the marriage just isn't going to work any longer. So they then decide to leave, but then the person being left just starts right at the beginning of the grief cycle in that denial and shock and, you know, wondering what they could have done differently to have avoided it all happening.
Do you think men and women react differently to divorce, or are there similarities?
No, I don't think it's based on gender, because I have both men and women coming to me. I find that the only sort of patterns there are is that the one that's being left seems to take a lot longer to recover, whereas the one that has done the leaving is ready to move on, start a new life, and they have no problems with creating that happy new life for themselves. Whereas the ones that have been left can struggle on through divorce, basically sort of feeling the whole world's turned upside down and they just really don't know what to do next. So they sort of get stuck in this twilight zone of looking back over their shoulder into the past, wishing they could turn the clock back, wishing they could have done something different, and really feeling quite bad about themselves, feeling they weren't good enough for the marriage to have stayed together, and feeling that the marriage failed and somehow that they contributed to that. So I find that people who come to me are mainly the ones that have been left and the ones that really need the help.
And do you feel, is it your observation or thinking that those who are told that their spouse wants a divorce, is there a feeling of a loss of control all of a sudden because you're not the one that asked for it, but you have to accept it, and now you're struggling to get redefine control in your life?
Absolutely, because they just feel the divorce is happening to them. So they just feel that, you know, the financial impact, the impact on the children, the family structure, the loss of the marriage, they could be losing their home because they're having to, you know, split the assets. So it's basically every facet of their life is impacted. And this then makes them feel as though they have no control whatsoever. So that's where it's great to be able to empower them to understand the process of divorce and understand what they're needing to do to be able to get through it, like building their resilience, building their self-confidence, and accepting that the marriage is over. Because I find too many people are sort of hoping for reconciliation when the one that has left has really made the decision that there's no hope. And people really need to understand that reconciliation doesn't work unless both parties do put 100% into it to try to make it work. So I find that trying to get people to get to that acceptance stage is quite, you know, a shift in moving them to that, so that they then can focus forward instead of keep looking backwards. I find that, you know, obviously with the loss of their partner, having the loss of their seeing their children as much as they used to, having them full time, is another loss that they really struggle to deal with. So that's where my co-parenting classes sort of help them be able to separate how they feel about the breakup with their co-parenting responsibilities, because those co-parenting relationships can become extremely toxic and full of conflict, and it has a major impact on the children.
Absolutely. And I'll get to that in a minute. I want to ask a few more questions about, let's start with the only example thus far provided was the example of somebody being told that their spouse wants a divorce and they didn't see it coming. So I want to dial it back a little bit. In all of the, I'm a mediator and I'm a paralegal who also files for divorce, amicable divorces, meaning people can actually communicate with one another. We hope when they actually start the process. That's what they tell me on the phone when they call, and then I start the process. And there are those times where, no, they expect me to talk for them. And I'm like, no, you came to me because you can communicate. But this is what I find interesting. I will field some phone calls from people initially that say, I was just served, or generally, I was just served and I didn't see it coming. And the more we talk, they share, well, the relationship hasn't been good. It's been rocky. They've actually talked about, in the last few years, maybe getting a divorce. Even with you, was it an absolute complete shock? This was a great marriage. All of a sudden, it's over. Or were there warning signs that you just didn't interpret as being big enough for your spouse to want to leave?
Yeah, there were signs. And my ex would be staying up late at night drinking and watching TV. And I would go downstairs and say, aren't you coming to bed? And he'd be, no, I'm going to just watch this and I'll come up later. So, you know, getting closer to the time that he was obviously going to be leaving, he was obviously struggling within his mind of whether he should stay or go, because, you know, he was sort of, basically it was a tug of war in his own mind whether he should be making that leap. And I never, ever thought that he would ever leave. I'm a very big believer that marriage, you go into it thinking it's going to be forever. So even if you have rocky times, or even if, you know, things are going on, if that communication isn't open, whereby, you know, when I would say, aren't you coming up to bed? Is there something wrong? And he'd say, no. But obviously there was something wrong. So that communication wasn't open enough for us to get through those issues, obviously, that he had. I didn't think that there were major issues that would warrant a divorce. But obviously, as I said before, you know, I didn't want the divorce, but if the other person isn't 100% committed to making it work, then you're wasting your time, wasting your energy trying to work out what you could do differently, even trying to reconcile. You're better off to basically accept the fact that, you know what, you deserve better. You deserve to be loved and adored. So if someone's struggling to be able to do that, let them go, because there's someone out there who's going to treat you far better.
Well, you know, it's so interesting, because in my marriage, which I've shared with the audience many times, different episodes, in my marriage, I knew it wasn't great. I knew that. And we didn't really talk about rectifying anything. We didn't address it, which I think maybe happens with a lot of people. They just kind of think it may work out on its own, or, okay, I'll be better tomorrow as a spouse. This can work out. So when I was asked for the divorce, even though, and this is how reality works with people, even though I knew it wasn't a great marriage, I was still in shock, I guess, not to hear, look, this isn't working for us. I'd like to at least go to counseling. I would like to at least address some of these issues to see if it can be better. That's where I felt like the rug was pulled out from under me. And I didn't go into thinking there was something wrong with me stage. but I did go into serious grief. I did the healthy thing though, which is I exercise. And you've talked about, so we're going to talk about how to deal with grief different ways. Let's do it now. So as a coach, how do you suggest people get out of that enveloping grief, that heavy depression?
Well, it's about building up your resilience. So instead of turning to self-sabotaging activities like drinking or comfort eating or gambling, anything like that is very, very destructive and can actually make your mental health worse because you start to, it just fuels your self-loathing, to be honest with you, because then you don't like who you're becoming. So you already have had that rejection from your ex. And now you're going to start rejecting yourself because you just feel that you're not at your best self.
Excellent. So I encourage people to. That's an excellent point. Keep going.
So I just feel that I encourage people to map out who they are as their best self, who are the influential people in their lives, who they admire, those different skills, and tap into their strengths. So it's about looking at who they really are and accentuating that to be even better. Just, you know, living your authentic best self and having the opportunity to build resilience into your life. So exercise and eating healthy and getting enough sleep definitely help you through divorce because you are needing this so much strength to get through this traumatic time that you need to be basically mentally healthy, physically healthy. So it's a case of focusing, getting that drive to focus to get through this and know that coming out the other end, you're going to be able to build the foundation for a happy life.
And that is absolutely true. With me, with my clients, with people that I talk to, you do come out of it better than you were before. You find skills and talents that you have that you didn't know. You feel like you can handle tougher things as they come up, right?
Yeah. Well, I think in time, you actually become out a better version of yourself than you were in your marriage, even how you look and how you feel about yourself. Because when you go through that transformation, it's probably a transformation that you probably should have done when you were in your marriage, but I can tell you, I look and feel better than I did when I was married. So I think you get to a point where you know that there's problems in your marriage, sort of. You sort of become quite complacent and think, well, you know, is this it? Is this the best it's going to be? And I think you can both, you know, sort of, I don't know, just think, well, this is normal, isn't it? The honeymoon period's over. It's normal for us to not talk as much or not enjoy each other's company as much because we're not in those young years. We've been together 19 years and you sort of think, well, you know, you still feel the marriage was worth something. But it's not until you actually leave and you have that transformation that you look back and you think, my gosh, that was a real blessing that happened because I'm so much a better person now and have a better life, a more fulfilling life. So, you know, I wouldn't recommend people go out and find a new partner straight away. I would say work on yourselves, create that happy life before you even go out and find somebody else because I see too many people feel that they need to be with someone to make them happy. And then that just comes with a lot of fraught with a lot of issues because you're just both taking baggage into that relationship and you can be two quite broken people trying to limp along having this relationship, which is not destined to work.
Yes. And in the United States, our statistics are that depending on the state you live in, 40 to 50% of first marriages end in divorce. But when you get up to third marriages, 70% end in divorce. And I think this speaks to your point that if you don't reinvent yourself, if you really don't clear out all the cobwebs, all the things that maybe did not work in the in the initial marriage, you're never going to create the better version of yourself to present to somebody else. And maybe you will choose the wrong person again or a similar person for comfort, right?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. I see so many people repeating their patterns of who they're choosing, but they're expecting a different outcome. And I don't know why they would be thinking that, you know, going for the same type of person is going to end any differently to the first relationship. So I get people in my program to go through identifying all of the partner qualities that they're looking for. And it's not just physical things. It's much deeper than that, about your values and about, you know, the qualities that are very endearing to supporting you going forward, that you both align together in what qualities you have. I do find that, you know, usually in your first marriage, you've chosen someone that sort of fulfills some of the qualities that you don't have. Like, I was a real introvert and my ex was a real party animal extrovert. And then I was a real go-getter in business and he wasn't. So we sort of were like a jigsaw pieces come together to make a whole person. But you find that once you go through divorce and you reinvent yourself, you have all of those skills to now go forward as a whole person. And then when you meet someone new who's also a whole person, you tend to go for someone who's a bit more like yourself, as opposed to being your opposite, that fulfills those needs that you don't currently have in your own attributes, if you know what I mean. It's sort of coupling with someone that's going to help you through life fulfill the attributes you don't have. But when you're divorced and reinvented and you're confident and you're going out there, you tend to find people that you want to couple with who are a lot like yourself.
That is so well said. And nobody has said that yet on this program. And I really like that you said that, because I find that even with me, I gravitate towards people as I get older that are just a little bit more like me. But I also have been thinking about, well, okay, opposites attract. That's great. Opposites attract. But then at some point, you have to have similarities, or how can you function together as a couple?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
So
some of those things that were the opposite you were attracted to can become the things that you can't stand about that person at the time of divorce.
You know, that's really true, because I was at a mediation convention a few years ago, and there was a class given by a therapist and a mediator, an attorney mediator. And the class was about, why do some couples have very long marriages, like 40, 50-year marriages? And they had little videotape snippets of older couples talking about why they felt their marriage stayed together. And every one of them said, we have a lot of similar interests, and those dissimilar things about each other were not annoying. They were very acceptable. And that's how they allowed differences to be okay, but they had a lot in common at the same time.
Exactly, yeah. And sometimes people, you know, couple up with someone, particularly after divorce, through loneliness. So therefore, there'll be red flags and deal breakers that should be going off in their head, but they think, oh no, but they just try and justify it through the, you know, oh, but I'm enjoying the affection, I'm enjoying the adoration. So you sort of turn a blind eye to some of the key things that are going to actually be detrimental to the relationship long term.
You said something earlier on in this conversation about your daughter saying to you, Mom, I just don't know what to do to make you happy. And this is how I would like to transition into the work you do in the co-parenting aspect. How, Cheryl, can a parent focus on their children while they're going through their own personal grief?
they've got to put the children's needs first. So I'm finding that with a lot of the co-parenting students or clients that I get coming to my program, to my classes, are basically so consumed with their ex and the breakup that they're not putting the children's needs first. And quite a few people are also using the children to be able to hurt the other parent with holding the kids or sending the kids as messengers. It's just a case of the parents are needing to rise above the breakup. And I know that's hard to do, but they have to be thinking that the children are watching their behavior, learning their behavior. So they can see how the parent is not handling stress, crises, not being problem solvers, not being able to be respectful, in being able to communicate, that's going to make sure that the whole family is going to transition to this new family structure smoothly. So the problem being is that there's so much conflict that the parents are at each other's throats. They're then having this conflict that's so visible to the kids. And when they're arguing about the kids, it's a case of the children then feeling as though they're the burden, they're the cause of the divorce, they're the ones causing their parents to be angry. So it's really a bad situation in parents not being able to put their own grief aside to be able to put the children first. Yes, you can grieve in your private time, even if you sort of can say to yourself, look, I've got to get through this component, this event. You may be going to an event at the school or somewhere where your ex is going to be. You've got to be focusing, this is for the child. You know, you can't go about life saying, well, I'm not going to go if he's going or she's going. So you've got to rise above it. You've got to make sure that you're being the adult here and that you're the one that's being seen by your children as being able to cope with this situation. Because let's face it, we bring our kids up to be kind, tolerant, caring, compassionate, respectful, and then divorce can turn us extremely ugly and we're not living the way we're used to, bringing our children up to behave in life. So the children can get quite disappointed thinking their parents are being quite mean to each other. So it's really important to make sure that the communication with the other parent is very respectful and be able to handle those conflict situations by looking for the behavior that's going to produce the best outcome. So, it could be, your ex is supposed to come and pick the kids up and he's got a crisis at work and you're thinking, oh, it's his turn to pick them up and he's not, doing his responsibility and this is all visible in front of the kids. Instead of thinking in a positive mindset, well, he usually picks them up. It's just that he's got this crisis. So I'll go and pick them up because the kids need me. Not that he needs me to pick them up, but my kids need me to pick them up. Take them home, bath them, feed them, and he can pick them up on the way through. So it's all about working together. You still have to work together as parents. You may not be partners anymore, but you still have to work together as parents to be there for the kids. So it's so important to make sure you've got this co-parenting relationship that's healthy and the communication is respectful and putting the kids' needs first.
Do you, in order to be able to do that, which is certainly the ideal, in order to be able to do that, do you suggest therapy to your clients if you observe them to be very distraught?
Only if the coaching can't get them, if they're not ready for change to be able to create that new life, to be able to be, try to be amicable in the co-parenting relationship and put the children first. If they're still not being able to move past how they feel about the breakup, it's really causing them to be in this very negative state and not be able to see the benefits of a good co-parenting relationship, then yes, counselling would be good for them because sometimes divorce can trigger childhood trauma so that this abandonment or rejection or something that they've gone through in their past has been triggered again. And through helping them, like coaching them into how they need to be or how they need to create a new life in the new family structure, if coaching is not helping them because they're not ready for change, there's some deep-seated issue from their past that's possibly playing out here that they need some help with from a counselor.
You said something when we were doing our pre-interview talk last week that I thought was important to bring up. When you're trying to get yourself out of the depression, out of the grief, and let's just say you have surrounded yourself with all the right people to help you, still, you said one thing that I thought was really important to share, and I wanted you to explain it more. And you said something like volunteering can take the focus off of you. Which we need, right? We need Absolutely. To give ourselves a break from this sadness that we're in. Talk about that a little bit more, please.
Well, when you're in the pit of depression, you're very internally focused. And, you know, your self-worth can be very, very low. So I found that volunteering was a very good outlet to be able to shift my focus from myself to someone else that was in possibly, you know, a worse situation in life than myself, you know, who can't put food on the table, who are living on the streets, things like that. So it's a case of, okay, well, my problems are not so bad when you are starting to work with people who have worse situations than yourself. And even by helping other people, it actually really boosts your bank of self-worth. You're filling up your tank to think, well, you know, I am doing kind things, I am doing good things to help others, and it actually is very good for the soul. It's really good to help yourself heal by helping others, because other people get the benefit of your help, but you also get the benefit, because it really gives you a good feeling in helping other people, and it makes you feel good about yourself. So your self-worth is just improving by doing that activity.
And I also wanted to make a clarification with you. You said that I want to ask the difference between a coach and a therapist, because you had said that you feel your role as a coach was to empower, not rescue.
Yes.
And I thought that was great. And so how do you see the differences in roles between a divorce coach and a therapist helping as you're going through divorce?
Well, with a therapist, to me, is sort of dealing with the emotional pain that has been triggered, but that could be from past trauma. And so therefore, the therapy helps you resolve that to be able to then move forward about, you know, how you believe, your belief system, your the things that happened in the past, you have had a perception about them that the counselor can then help you realize that your perception may not have been, you know, what actually was intended. So it's a case of a coach helps people, well, empowers people to be able to think of what they want their life to look like. So they get to understand what their current situation is and be able to visualize what they want their life to look like, and then gain the help and the support to understand what the steps are to be able to get there. And it's just having that support to build that plan, to be able to say, okay, to be able to get to your future state, we need to do this, 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 and this. And it's basically building that plan to push them forward so they're future focused. Whereas I think with a counselor, it's a bit more past focus of what's impacting you as you go through this new crisis. So coaches are very much about the future, getting you to be looking toward the future. Stop looking back in the past. The past is done. You can't control what's happened. It's done. Accept it. So you've got to get to that acceptance phase. And I know that's easier said than done. But when you look back and reflect on what's happened and realize there is really nothing you can do about it. So the only way forward is to create that momentum of, you know, I do healthy mind activities where I go through gratitude every day. You've got to be grateful. You know, write down three things you're grateful for. Look at three positive things that happen to you in the day. It's about shifting your mindset from a negative to a positive, because while you're in a negative mindset, you can't even see the opportunities or possibilities out there because you're just seeing all the negative. And even when negative things happen to you, you know, you can always find a positive that comes out of it. You know, like if you're stuck in traffic and thinking, oh my gosh, I'm going to be late for work, and you're thinking all negative. But if you flip it and you say, yeah, but if I was 5 minutes earlier, I could have been in that accident that was ahead. So it's about flipping and trying to find the positive. Flip your mindset to find the positive in any negative. Like, you know, even if you get a flat tire and you're sort of, oh gosh, I've got a flat tire. You know, life is not going well for me right now. But when you change the tire, think, oh, thank goodness it wasn't flat, because I've done that in the past. Been changing a tire and the one, the spare in the boot is flat. So all that effort. So it's about looking for the positives in a negative situation. So and, it's change.
And then on the legal side of this, so thank you for the differentiation between a coach and a therapist. But also part of your work, how do you work with people as they're going through the legal process?
Okay, so basically I understand their situation, and a lot of times people come to me and they're either in the mental state of, I don't want him or her to get anything. I want to, you know, they shouldn't have left it. I'm not going to let them see the children. So I have this situation where I'm coaching people about, you know, well, you realize that if you can't sort of come to some form of win-win solution together, then this is going to cost so much money in court that family wealth pool is going to be eroded by fighting for more and more. So what I get them to do is write out what the worst case scenario could be, what the best case scenario could be, and what a possible scenario could be. Because I find that most people are trying to achieve the best case scenario and putting their foot down saying, no, that's what I want. I want that best case scenario. But I find if they look at what are the possible outcomes, that's something that's acceptable, but it might not be the best case, they're shifting their mind to be able to be open to compromise and be able to negotiate to enable them not to have to get to that court situation. Because I'm finding people are losing tens of thousands and hundreds of thousands, depending on how long they go through the court system. So when they come to the divorce center, I've got all of the resources that they need. So I've got a national team of lawyers, mediators, coaches, financial planners, and counselors. So it's about them coming to me and we understanding where they are in the process of divorce. And I coach them. But then as they need those other experts, those other professionals, that's when they get referred to them. So that they're not just going straight to a lawyer and spilling out all of their emotional grief and the meter's running and it's, you know, the dollars are ticking away. It's about getting that emotional support to be able to be empowered through the process, then coupling them up with a lawyer if they're wanting a lawyer, or if it's a case of they're both agreeing what they want to do for their settlement, I get them to go to my legal advisor who's basically, you know, a separation specialist who prepares all the documentation for them that they then are able to agree on and submit it, so that, you know, they can bypass mediation, they can bypass court. So if they're amicable, they can have their legal documentation done for them. If they're not amicable, they then have to go to mediation to try and compromise. If that doesn't work, that's when they end up in court. But you want court to be the last resort, because court is where it constantly gets, all the money just gets chewed up with going to court to argue, and then eventually you're disempowered because then the court decides what the outcome should be. So it's all about making sure you're empowered through the process. And even with the co-parenting, most times when people go to court, I get a lot of people who the court have ordered them to have a co-parenting class so they can actually learn how to be, civil with each other. So why go all the way to court to be told you've got to do a co-parenting class and spend that money? Why not come to, the divorce centre and have that co-parenting class done, be able to have the coaching to get you in the right mindset so it sets you up so that you are able to amicably divorce and get through that process a lot quicker and recover and heal a lot faster.
So there were two things in what you said that I wanted to follow up on. One is divorce is an issue of compromise. And you have to just accept that going into it. No one person generally gets their way completely. And that's what I try and instill on my clients when they say before a mediation, this is what I want and I'm not going to accept anything else. And I said, well, then why book a mediation? Mediation is an issue of compromise. Divorce is an issue of compromise. And if you go to court, you will more than likely find out that you're each going to get a little of what you want and yes, not as much of everything that you want. It's going to work out that way. So thank you for bringing that up. And then, I forgot. Well, I wanted to ask about mediation with you. What do you find is the hardest part of mediation as a mediator?
I find it's hard for people to budge. They're basically...
No, you, as a mediator, what do you find the hardest? Yeah.
I think it's trying to get them to come to some form of agreement. Sometimes I think they feel they've been forced by the courts to come to mediation, and basically then they've come to mediation thinking, well, I'm not going to agree to anything. So it makes it very hard to be able to facilitate them working through their issues to get to a place of looking at all options and then coming to an agreement. So if they come into it feeling that they're just not going to agree to anything, that's when we have the big problem where mediation can be a waste of time. Because if you're not open to mediate in looking for solutions and compromises, then it's not going to work.
Do you, as a mediator, look at your clients in the first mediation and they may just be sitting in their own positions, not willing to budge, but you can see possibly as a mediator where compromises are because you're listening to both people talk about what they want, and as a neutral third person are actually free enough to think creatively, oh my gosh, they're both saying the same thing in this area, but to get them to hear it at that point in time may be premature. And then do you, and if you have cases like this, do you suggest everybody pause on mediation and come back in a couple weeks and maybe give them a little thinking to do? How do you handle those impasses that may not be permanent impasses?
Yeah, I basically try to find the common ground between the two of them. Sometimes when you're dealing with an issue, they're just looking at their own viewpoint. But when they look at why the other person feels the way they do about a particular issue, if you can try to find that common ground where they both want the same thing, but they're just thinking about it in a different way. So they want to have the same outcome, but they're not just working together on looking at how they can create that. So it's about working with them to look at, well, you both want this. How do you both feel that you would be able to, get that outcome together? How would you both be able to see an opportunity, an option of being able to you know, basically meet both of your needs in some aspects to be able to come to a compromise. So then they can start to think, but you've got to allow them to have that time to do their sort of wanting to get through and tell all the issues and just let them get it out of their system, basically. And then you say, okay, great. I understand all of the issues. I've got the issues here. This is what I've captured as the issues. And then when you're going into the exploration phase, you're saying, okay, this is future focused. Don't look back into the past now. We're now looking into the future. What would you like to see happen, and what options do we have to be able to come to some form of agreement? And they start exploring options then of, what if he did this, then okay, I might do that then. I'll relinquish and do that. So it's a case of getting them to look future focused is the key, really.
Yes, and that is what all of the good mediators say. And you said something else, and I want to reinforce this to the listeners, and that is, we as mediators certainly don't want you fighting. If you could at all avoid that, can't always. But you said process-wise, you allow them the time to talk about the past. You allow them the time to just get everything off their shoulders, so to speak. And once that happens, now the path is clear. Let's talk about the future. Did I hear you right?
Yes, as long as they're not sort of being disrespectful, it's very important for them to be respectful to each other. Right. So it's about how the issues affect them. So it's very much I statements. Oh, I feel this and I feel that. This is what it does. This is what the impact of this issue is to me, as opposed to he did this, she did that. So you can't have them doing that sort of, because then it just escalates into conflict. So it's a case of getting them to contain it with, okay, how is the issue impacting you? How is it impacting your life? How is it holding you back from being able to come to some form of agreement? So then they can say, well, you know, I was very hurt when they did this, or, you know, just trying to get them to do it from a place of more of feelings, from their feelings, as opposed to blame or attacking.
You know, that's such a great technique that we can actually do in our daily lives in anything. Doesn't matter what the situation is, but when we get tangled up into a relationship kind of issue, be it with friends, family, at work, at a store, you know, we may be disagreeing about being charged something for a service. It really is a phenomenal technique that I make myself learn on a daily basis when it's me involved, and that is, hold on. It's the sound of my voice, it's the words I choose that will make the situation better, and to just simply, instead of blaming the other entity in whatever you're discussing, to go back and say, well, my feeling is this, this is how I felt when, I'm wondering if it's possible to. Presented like that, these are great conversation or language techniques to use, and all of a sudden you're engaging the other person in a more positive way, right?
Yes, exactly. Yeah. It's putting your positive need across, but in a way that is getting some form of empathy, because they're understanding your viewpoint of how it's making you feel, as opposed to attacking.
Yeah, that empathy is important. I want to finish with, because we're closing the hour, something that we really haven't talked about yet, but I wrote it in my notes when we did our pre-interview, and that was, along with the co-parenting program and other classes that you have, you are going to start working with teenagers, or you have recently started working with teenagers in divorce?
Yeah, I'm developing a program for teenagers, to empower teenagers impacted by divorce. I find that there's plenty of books out there for young children, but there's nothing really out there for teenagers to help them through this process. And the problem being is teenagers take on a lot of responsibility, whereby some teenagers tend to take over that absent parent role and be supporting the grieving parent and take on a lot of responsibility of, you know, helping and supporting that parent through divorce because they're struggling. Or, you know, the teenagers may be having conflict with their parents or not liking how their parents are reacting. And it's a case of trying to get them also to separate how they feel about the family structure changes and the breakup that's happened to their parental relationship. So their parental relationship, particularly with the one that's left, can really be damaged. So it's a case of trying to get them to separate how they feel about the actual breakup and look at their parent-child relationship from the past when it was good, and trying to look at how it can be maintained, sustained into the future, separating that from what's happened to them. Because I don't think they understand that when a parent leaves, sometimes it's because the parents are making that decision that they've tried as much as they can for, can be years, but they've got to a state where their mental health is going to be impacted if they don't make that move. So it's about helping kids be empowered, being their best selves as well, and looking at ways of building their resilience, of being able to recharge their batteries and be able to cope with conflict and being able to understand their feelings and work towards, you know, healing.
And also to show teenagers who are not little children and almost approaching, if they aren't already, young adulthood, that there are certain responsibilities they absolutely don't have in the divorce and should not put them on their shoulders, right?
Yeah, exactly. So it's a case of, you know, making sure that they set boundaries with their parents, because a lot of times, you know, a lot of responsibilities push their way, whereby, you know, especially with, oh, tell your father this or tell your mother that. It's a case of encouraging teenagers to not be that middleman, to be able to say, you either talk to them directly or I'll go and tell the other one to contact you, because you need to talk to them, but I'm not going to be the messenger. So it's about empowering teenagers to be able to set boundaries, because they can get caught up in the middle, and then they're, you know, you've heard of the saying, shooting the messenger, when they've got to go and deliver a message and they know it's not going to be received very well, they cop the brunt of that, you know, emotional outburst of the other parent, and really they shouldn't have to be put into that situation.
Right. And just to be able to simply say to your parents, you know, it's really not my role. It's really exactly not my responsibility. I would prefer not having it. You know, just nicely, like something as soft as that, I think would be hugely helpful to teenagers who want to rush and help their parents. Isn't that the natural inclination? They don't want to see a parent suffer. What can I do to help you? Like your daughter.
Yes.
Bringing it back.
Yes, exactly.
So I know you're in Sydney, Australia. So working with people going through the court system, maybe here, I don't know whether that would be something that you could do, but certainly we are all the same people. We are all humans, regardless of where we live. And if people would like you to work with them, to empower them, not to rescue them, and to
yes
get them to keep thinking in a forward way, how do they get in touch with you, and how do they buy your book, The Divorce Tango?
Okay, so they can go to my website, thedivorcetango.com, and they're able to see the coaching, the programs I run, and also the books on sale in the website as well.
And do you do Zoom classes that people from other countries can participate in?
Yeah, absolutely. So all of my programs are run via Zoom and the coaching. So I have group classes for the co-parenting so that people can join the group, and they can basically, you know, they'll hear there's lots of different issues, and sometimes there's lots of common issues, so they can really feed off each other to be able to know that they're not going through this alone. So the co-parenting classes are usually run over a weekend as 2 4-hour blocks, because a lot of people have come to me wanting that completion certificate to take to court, because that completion certificate just demonstrates their commitment to co-parenting and really helps them in that court process, when the courts are trying to understand, well, who's trying to do their best here and who's the roadblock. It just helps if you're able to do a program just to show that, you know, I've invested in this program to be able to make sure I'm doing the right thing as putting my children first.
That's a big deal to go to a co-parenting class. If anything shows solidarity in wanting to do the best for your children, the co-parenting classes are where it's at. Those are brilliant. Yeah, but
it's I don't recommend the couple come to the same class.
Oh.
So I have them go to a different class, two different classes, because they need to be able to speak openly. They need to be able to work through the challenges that they're having, because I take them through challenges and working out with them what options they could take to get a better outcome. So if they're in the same class, then there's going to be conflict. So it's best for them to be in separate co-parenting classes so they can learn to be able to become a good co-parent from the skills that they've learned, as opposed to getting embroiled in, you know, oh, well, my ex is in the same class and he's saying this or she's saying that. So it's a case of just making sure that they have the freedom to be able to be open about their situation and the challenges they're having, so that they can come back together and being able to work together.
It's interesting. It's very interesting. I hadn't heard anybody say that before, but again, you know, we have similarities in the roles that we play, but we also have differences. So that's great, Cheryl. So you've been listening, everybody, to Cheryl Duffy, author of The Divorce Tango and president or owner of The Divorce Center, correct? With a variety of services. Pardon me?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes, the founder of The Divorce Center.
Very good. Very good. Very good. Thank you, Cheryl, so much for spending time with us. This was so valuable. I appreciate it.
Thank you so much. It's great to be able to work with like-minded people and help so many out there, because this is a global problem, divorce.
Thank you for saying that. It absolutely is, and it unites us at the same time. And thank all of you for listening once again to Constructive Uncoupling. I'm Judith Weigel, the amicable divorce expert, and you can reach me at judith@amicabledivorceexpert.com. judith@amicabledivorceexpert.com. Please tell your other divorcing friends about this podcast, because we have exceptional people joining us every day, like Cheryl Duffy. Take care, and I'll talk to all of you next week.